Good evening. Welcome. My name is Nancy Amato, and I'm the town moderator here in Milford. I want to thank you for attending this educational forum entitled Civil Liberties, the Patriot Act, and Related Measures. We want to thank some state representatives out there and several elected officials. We want to also thank them for coming and also the members of the law enforcement. Co-sponsors of this event are the Wadley Memorial Library and the New Hampshire Unitarian Universalist Social Responsibility Department. We have several endorsers, and they include the Toadstool Bookshop, Uniting Church of Christ, Church of Our Savior, the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Milford, Peterborough Unitarian Universalist Church's Social Justice Committee, and Worldview Limited. Following the program, please join us in the adjacent banquet room for refreshments and conversation, and the restrooms are located down this hallway at the end. And our thanks go out to the numerous volunteers that made this event possible, and Earthwood National Foods for their generous beverage donation. Tonight's event will be videotaped for educational purpose. The format of the evening will be that I will introduce each of the two speakers. They will each then have 25 minutes for their presentation. After that point, we'll have prepared questions. And then after that, around 8:40, 8:45, we'll open it up to the audience for questions or comments, and hopefully ending around 9 o'clock and going for refreshments. Our first speaker will be Al Rivega. He is the Assistant United States Attorney. Alfred Rivega serves in the White Collar section of the Criminal Division of the United States Attorney's Office for the District of New Hampshire. Among Assistant U.S. Attorney Rivega's other duties, he is the office's primary point of contact for intake and prosecution of environmental crimes and bankruptcy fraud, prosecutes a large proportion of the office's passport fraud caseload, as part of Operation Checkmate in response to the events of 9/11, and chairs the U.S. Attorney's Office Identity Crimes Working Group. Prior to joining the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of New Hampshire, he was in private practice in Concord, New Hampshire, concentrating in law relating to investment securities. Prior to that, he served as an assistant county prosecutor, prosecuting felony and misdemeanor crime, both violent and white collar. He is the former head of Gun Owners of New Hampshire and was a 1996 gubernatorial candidate. We want to welcome Al Rivega, Assistant U.S. Attorney.
Thank you very much. An eminent jurist, Judge Learned Hand, once said, "The spirit of liberty is a spirit which is not too sure it is always right." Goodness knows I've had personal occasion to embrace that spirit on many occasions. And I think it's a healthy spirit in which to view this entire discussion. It's a big part of why the Department of Justice has the U.S. attorneys send assistant U.S. attorneys such as myself out to do these forums, because the Department of Justice, as I respectfully submit each of us, should sort of embrace that spirit. The spirit of liberty is a spirit which is not too sure it is always right. It is true that I am a lawyer and a recovering politician. It's an affliction with which I've struggled for some time. You go to a dinner party, they serve chicken, you want to get up and make a speech. The spouse grabs you, elbows you in the ribs, and makes
keep talking so I can know which.
Oh, he wants me to keep talking so he knows. Perhaps not that much. Is there a moose in there? How's that?
Yeah.
How's that, folks? That good? All right. Better? Thank you.
Good luck.
In any event, though, it's been 8 years since I ran for office, and as you heard, I'm just a line AUSA. My focus of my duties in the U.S. Attorney's Office is primarily white collar crime, fraud, that type of thing. I'm in the white collar section of the criminal division. But I've been a lawyer for 23 years. I've only been in AUSA, as we say in the acronym, heavy federal service, in AUSA for 2.5 years. And about half my career I spent in the private sector. So perhaps, unlike many people who would come to speak on this topic from a U.S. attorney's office, I, for instance, was not in the U.S. attorney's office when 9/11 occurred. I was in my private practice office, and I watched it. I watched it unfold. I watched the towers come down from the television in my private office. I was not in the U.S. attorney's office when the Patriot Act was enacted. And so, I'd respectfully submit to you that I bring a perspective to it that perhaps not all folks, either in the private sector or in government. I've spent about half my career in each, and again, only 2.5 years as a Fed. One of the things I think it's important to ask, and if folks aren't too embarrassed, and this sort of reminds me of the day when I was town moderator for 3 2-year terms in the town of Sullivan. I doubt people are going to be too bashful, at least if you're anything like the people in Sullivan, you won't be too bashful. If you're not too bashful, I'd like to ask for a show of hands. Anyone who believes that had the 19 terrorists who flew those four planes on 9/11, anyone who believes that if they had had control in New York City or in D.C. of a thermonuclear bomb, they would not have detonated it, please raise your hand. Anyone who believes that as we stand and sit here, as we discuss this, that there aren't terrorists right now seeking, planning, hoping to sabotage a nuclear reactor, please raise your hand. And finally, anyone who believes that there are not terrorists right now trying to secure a thermonuclear bomb with the intent of detonating the United States of America, please raise your hand. I respectfully submit to you that obviously the vast majority of this group agrees that if the 19 terrorists had had a thermonuclear bomb, they'd have detonated it on 9/11 instead of using those airplanes. The vast majority, I respectfully submit to you, of the citizenry of the United States and of the members of the United States Congress agree with the overwhelming majority of the folks in this room that if terrorists could get a hold of or had control of a nuclear bomb or sabotage a nuclear plant, that they would do so, they would use it, and they're currently trying to get hold of a thermonuclear bomb with the intent of detonating it in the United States of America. Now, I want to add, it's important, that I personally do not know, I don't have a security clearance to find that out if anybody in the government knows, and if I did have that security clearance and I did know, then I wouldn't be able to talk about it, I'm sure. My attitude on that score, and I agree with the majority of the people in this room, the majority of the people I believe in this nation, the majority of the people in the federal Congress, the federal Senate, that those things are true, that that's the magnitude of the problem. It's a magnitude, it's a problem of a magnitude that this country has never, and I'd submit to you that no country has ever submitted or been faced with in history. Last time nuclear war was a large concern, it was held off by the, I suppose, appropriate acronym MAD, Mutually Assured Destruction. There was a nation about which we were concerned about using nuclear weapons against us.
I'll try to keep going.
And if that nation had used them, then they would have been retaliated against, and that held off nuclear war. Right now, I really defy anyone to state what the demands of the terrorists are, what we could do, even if we wanted to comply with a set of demands that would protect us from that kind of a threat, which leaves us, folks, in a situation which is really rather unprecedented in law enforcement. Law enforcement conventionally is notified of an offense. Once they're notified of an offense, for most offenses in the federal system, they investigate this thing that's already happened, and there's 5 years 5-year statute of limitations on most offenses, to address it, to do something about bringing the person to justice who in the past has committed this offense. With regards to the new mandate that terrorist attacks, whether nuclear, biological, chemical, or simply conventional explosives, or something very innovative like stealing an airliner with its wings full of fuel and flying it into the trade towers because you've done a good job of your engineering calculations and you figured out that they'll collapse if you do it, preventing that is something which, both in order of the current magnitude of the task and the order of magnitude of the potential damage, has never been faced by law enforcement before. And ladies and gentlemen, when you're trying to prevent something, you don't have a 5-year statute of limitations. You don't have 5 years. Many times when law enforcement first gets information about a potential attack, and some real examples are people trying to get Stinger missiles, trying to buy Stinger missiles, people trying to mail anthrax, people trying to make truck bombs out of tankers, 18-wheelers. When law enforcement first finds out about that, they certainly don't have 5 years to investigate it. They likely won't have 5 months, might not have 5 weeks or 5 days, and maybe not even 5 hours. To the extent that law enforcement and the military and all of us as citizens are going to be able to prevent these types of attacks, efficiency and speed of action with regards to law enforcement is absolutely critical. And I can tell you, based on my background, from what I've seen both in the private sector and in the public sector, that the Patriot Act is and has been, since it's enacted, an indispensable tool in that effort. There's absolutely no question that certain efforts, such as an effort to acquire Stinger missiles, is just one example, have been prevented. The problem is, from a public accountability point of view, from folks wanting to know whether this is working or not, it is obviously, and thank God, it is not as big a news item when you prevent airplanes from flying into a building as when it happens. When you prevent a Stinger missile from being acquired as it would be when if it were fired at a commercial airliner and blew it up. The Patriot Act not only has been that kind of a invaluable tool, there obviously are concerns that it not be abused, just as, and there are appropriate concerns that it not be abused, just as no other law be abused. And the spirit of liberty, the spirit which is not too sure, it is always right. One of the things to be aware of, be acutely aware of, is one of the primary areas in which the Patriot Act is used, and the Patriot Act made a difference, is it applied certain abilities to the area of international terrorism, which had always been available, or have been available since approximately the 70s, for use against drug trafficking and conventional organized crime. Most of the provisions about, I believe all of the provisions, about which there are concerns, are subject to judicial oversight. In other words, before someone can get a what's commonly referred to as a sneak and peek search warrant, the warrant can't be obtained without law enforcement going to a judge and convincing a judge that it's justified. The warrant, when it's executed, the person whose premises are searched, they're not notified immediately, but they are notified generally right before they're arrested. The reason they're not notified immediately in the area of terrorism, just as has been the case for years now in the drug trade and in your more conventional organized crime trade, is because if a warrant is executed and the search reveals that suspect A is a member of a cell with 4 other suspects involved who are identified by code names or for whatever other reason, on the first suspect's computer or in their paperwork, if that suspect A has to be notified the day that the search warrant is executed, then all other 4 will just cut that one out of the cell. They will either escape, if we're fortunate but not too fortunate, because certainly that's not going to prevent them, or they'll accelerate the pace at which they commit the act. When as in drug cases, as in organized crime cases, as has been the case for years, if the search warrant is executed and a return is made and the first suspect isn't notified immediately because in the course of the search, law enforcement discovered there's going to be a meeting in 3 days, that enables law enforcement in 3 days, because they don't have 5 months, they don't have 5 weeks or 5 years, that enables law enforcement to prevent what they were going to do instead of letting it happen or having it happen and then having to address it afterwards. I don't know where I am on my time and I don't want to go over. Trying to address this entire area is a great deal like trying to address the history of World War II in half an hour. It's an act that many of you probably are quite well aware is pretty lengthy. And I believe that only part of the provisions are controversial. I'm not sure anyone is too upset about the fact that, for instance, more federal agents were hired to be air marshals or things such as that. That's part of the Patriot Act, is more money for people to try and prevent these things from occurring. Obviously, one of the concerns is with regards to libraries and what people can and can't discover about who's been using what books in the library, what resources, what internet resources. Obviously, terrorists are not unsophisticated. They're very sophisticated. One technique in terrorism has been to try and utilize public computers, public books, public or telephones, various different cell phones, use one, dispose of it, use another, dispose of it, use another, dispose of it. Because until the Patriot Act, those were beyond the reach. If prior to the Patriot Act, law enforcement suspected Muhammad Atta of planning an attack, they could get a wiretap order or a pen register with judicial supervision to look at one phone in the area of terrorism, in the area of drugs and organized crime. Once again, some of the provisions that folks are concerned about with regards to the Patriot Act in this area have been the law with regards to drugs and organized crime for a long time. They can now, thanks to the Patriot Act, just as has always been the case in drugs, just as has always been the case in organized crime, they can focus on Muhammad Atta or whoever it might be, the suspected terrorist, and if he buys a disposable cell phone and gets rid of it every few days, the surveillance goes, it follows that person. Law enforcement doesn't have to go back to a judge and get a new order to find out what numbers he's calling every single time he gets a new phone for the new number. The specific reason that people like terrorists and people like drug dealers historically and people like organized crime figures would engage in this type of thing is to frustrate surveillance. Because up until the time a few years ago when this type of, it's sometimes called roving wiretap authority, what it really means is the warrant or the pen register, which is a federal order that just takes down what numbers are being called, doesn't capture the content of the phone call. But all of these are issued after a law enforcement officer goes to a judge, makes a showing, and the judge says, you're right, you've got probable cause, here's the order. None of this can be done by our office or the police or the FBI or anyone else on their own without judicial supervision. Folks who believe that the Patriot Act goes too far also, of necessity, have to believe that the bench either is not or cannot or will not do its job. That is its job. And I guess finally, to the extent there are ever any abuses of this law or any aspect of it, and I'd submit to you that there haven't been, and certainly to the extent that there have been, they've been addressed. But any abuses of this law, just like any abuse of any other law, should be addressed, or the remedy ought to be directed to the abuser. If somebody falsely accuses someone else of murder, that person goes to prison and then is let out because of DNA evidence. The solution for that is not to repeal the laws outlawing murder. It's to go against the person who falsely accused the one who was incarcerated. If someone misuses the law and abuses their position as a corrections officer, takes advantage of prisoners, sells drugs in the prison, the solution is not to disband the prison let out the prisoners, the solution is to bring charges against a corrections officer. And I'd submit to you that that's not only appropriate, that's not only what's always been done, and that's not only what always will work with regards to any abuses, present, past, future, claimed or otherwise, with regards to the Patriot Act. That is what's necessary if, in fact, we are to address effectively the magnitude of the problem we are all facing right now for the first time ever in the history of this country, and quite possibly in the history of the planet. Nothing quite like this has ever occurred before. It's a very, very difficult problem to address. And it's not just up to our office, it's not just up to the military, or the FBI, or the Secret Service, the Diplomatic Security Service. It is, in fact, up to all of us. It's up to Congress, who also has oversight duties in the Patriot Act twice a year. The Attorney General, John Ashcroft, at this time, has to report to Congress on how this act is being used and how it's progressing. The judiciary has their part to do. And every one of us, all of us, as citizens, have our jobs to do if we're going to keep, to the extent possible, people like the ones who flew those airplanes into the building from getting a nuclear bomb, a biological weapon, a chemical weapon, or just a more conventional weapon like another airplane. One of the important things, the spirit of liberty, spirit which is not too sure, it is always right. I respectfully submit to you that's the spirit in which this law was enacted by 98 senators to one in the U.S. Senate, by I think 85% of the members of the United States House of Representatives, and they're taking input. It's a spirit in which we all ought to be concerned about it. The spirit of liberty is a spirit which is not too sure it is always right. It's a very, very serious time and very important issue, and it's one that this law is a vital tool. It's proved itself a vital tool. It hasn't been abused. Respectfully submit to you that to the extent it ever is abused, we would address the abuser and not remove the tool because it's necessary in this fight. Thank you very much. I've probably gone over my time, so I'm going to stop.